C+21. Ford Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. In a huge and expensive coup for Blitz News, Marion DeClercq, the long-term host of Focus 2020, joined their mid-afternoon team in the studio to take viewers' calls for the better part of an hour. Although Tuesday afternoons normally saw some of the lowest ratings of the week, this was anything but a normal Tuesday afternoon. Concerned citizens from coast to coast had nowhere else to turn for information but their TV sets, and this audience was as captive as they came. The primary source of the particularly pronounced mid-afternoon ratings spike, however, was not Marion DeClercq. Rather, it was Dan McCarthy. Still much loved by the public for his relentless and selfless pursuit of the truth a year earlier, Dan's views on all manner of topics were courted by media organizations on a regular basis. One analysis of why Dan's popularity transcended generational bounds, like few others, was that people liked him for different reasons. Youth audiences admired him for sticking it to the man, while older audiences respected the dignified way he had handled things when the man fought back. This analysis wasn't the most nuanced, but Emma had always thought there was at least some truth behind it. So when Emma received a call from Blitz News asking if Dan would be willing to share some calming words, both of them were willing to go along with it. Neither were under any illusion that Blitz cared more about calming words than stellar ratings, but the invitation presented an opportunity to organically draw attention to their planned revelation of the fourth plaque without the need to court publicity with the old announcement of a future announcement tactic Emma had repeatedly used to maintain and maximize attention during the rocky days after the IDA leak. Trey's call earlier in the day had generated much discussion among the whole group, and the idea of publicly revealing the fourth plaque and Trey's crystal-clear footage of an alien craft flying over Lolo met universal agreement. Timo, in particular, strongly concurred that it was time to do something to shake things up. Earlier in the morning, he had received further updates from GSC insiders, as well as his Fiori Frontieri staff, who had been present at the summit, all of whom confided that the optimism President Slater tried to get across about the likelihood of suitable defensive measures being developed and launched before it was too late was, quite frankly, not founded in reality. Nothing revolutionary had yet been proposed, and nothing non-revolutionary could do the job. Emma coached Dan for 2 solid hours before he was set to go live on Blitz News via a video call in her home office, where she promised to stay right by his side in case he needed any help at any point or came too close to revealing exactly what they were going to show the world the following day. Henry, who had been at New Care Grillin for several hours discussing things with Walter Byrd and Phil Norris, wouldn't know that Dan was going to be on live TV until he either saw him on screen or heard about it later. Dan and Clark had briefly discussed whether they should tell Henry about the plaque and footage between hinting at them on TV and revealing them to the public the next day, and both agreed that they should. Neither brother raised the prospect of full disclosure. Telling Henry or anyone else about the hoax at this point could have done no good whatsoever and wasn't even on the table as a rational option. But the last thing either wanted was for Henry to endure the embarrassment of only learning that his sons had been keeping their possession of the fourth plaque from him at the same time everyone else found out about it. When the time came for Dan's interview with Marion DeClercq, he looked into the small webcam above Emma's computer and couldn't help but imagine the tens of millions of people watching live and the hundreds of millions who would eventually see his interview. He thought he was ready. "Hello, Dan," DeClercq said. "The world has been waiting to hear your take on..." All of a sudden, the words stopped registering in Dan's mind. As his heart pounded in his chest like it was trying to burst out, time seemed to stop and the world seemed to fall silent. Without any real thought and without knowing how many seconds had actually passed, Dan covered his face with his hands, then stood up and stepped out of the webcam's line of sight. "I can't," he said, loudly enough for everyone to hear. "Emma, I can't do it." Emma instinctively sat down in the empty chair and told DeClercq that she would take over from here. Clark, watching live on Blitz News in the adjacent living room, quickly hurried through to check that Dan was all right. He saw Emma in the chair. She hadn't yet sat down when he left the TV, so he hadn't known she was going to take over, and quietly encouraged Dan to leave her office so she could continue without too much distraction. Dan shook his head. He wasn't leaving, so Clark stood at his side. "The reason people wanted Dan to do this today is the same reason he can't," Emma said to de Klerk and her untold millions of viewers around the country. "He didn't want to do this. I talked him into it because I know that his words have meaning to a lot of people, but I think all of you in the studio know as well as I do that Dan isn't built for this kind of thing. He's not built like us, with our effortless ability to switch between emotions as the situation demands, with our endless supply of snappy one-liners, with the way we can brush things off with a dismissive laugh while our stomachs are in knots. But the main difference between Dan and us is that Dan can't lie with a straight face, like it's nothing. I wanted him to come on here today and tell everyone that everything's going to be okay, because that's what people need to hear. But Dan couldn't do that. He couldn't say that, because it's not true. What people need to hear doesn't change the objective reality that everything is already not okay. And where Dan McCarthy differs from us is that he doesn't share our ability to pretend that it is." Emma quickly qualified her statement about nothing being okay by explaining that she was talking in terms of societal stability rather than Earth's long-term safety. She stressed that the word coming from Argentina was positive on that front, precisely the kind of white lie Dan had ultimately realized he wouldn't be able to deliver. And went as far as to paraphrase Franklin D. Roosevelt in saying that fear itself posed a greater danger to humanity than the eminently preventable apocalypse that everyone quite understandably feared so much. As Dan watched on, more in awe than ever, Emma proceeded to answer every question de Klerk asked. Much of the detail of their conversation passed him by, however, as his mind remained unfocused and overwhelmed. He had never felt anything like this, even when standing at the drive-in a year earlier and directly addressing the world's media. In fleeting moments of mental clarity, he reflected that this was probably because the previous year's task, however difficult, had been straightforward in terms of what he had to do: pursue the truth and share it with the world. This wasn't the first time that Dan had internally or vocally lamented how much more complicated everything had become since Ben Gold came clean on Walker's hoax, but it was definitely the most acutely he had appreciated the difference. The trickiest part of Emma's fairly brief appearance came when she had to inform the world that Timo would be hosting a press conference in the new Fiore Frontieri headquarters in Colorado Springs the next day. It wasn't easy to get across the point that Timo had something important to say without inviting angry questions about why he hadn't said it already or why he couldn't at least say it today, but Emma called on her years of high-level PR experience to get the job done. In hindsight, she was beginning to realize that this really would have been a lot for the far less experienced Dan to handle, and with that realization came guilt for putting him on the spot in the first place. As soon as the interview was over, Emma disabled her webcam and apologized to Dan for not insisting on doing it herself all along. She hugged him, but although he reciprocated and told her not to worry about it, she sensed that his mind wasn't quite there. "Are you doing okay with this man?" Clark asked. "You're allowed to say no." "I think this might make a difference," Dan replied, giving a slight nod that required more effort than he let on. "I don't exactly know how or why, but I've got a feeling that Timo's press thing with the plaque is going to speed things up somehow." "Let's hope it turns things around instead of just speeding them up," Emma said with a slight chuckle. "I mean, what with all the looting and the financial crash and all of this mass panic, I'd say things are kind of speeding towards the edge of a cliff right now." Dan saw the funny side and smiled for the first time in a while. "So I guess you and Timo should probably start thinking about how tomorrow is going to go down, right?" "Yep," Emma said, squeezing Dan's hand before kissing him on the cheek and opening the door to head out towards Timo and Tara. "No rest for the wicked."